Friends, welcome to the Ransomed Heart podcast. John and Stacy Eldridge with you this week. We are interrupting the series we were doing last week. We were excerpting a teaching on the restoration of the soul, which actually is pretty appropriate to our interruption this week, but we needed to step in and share some news with you, share our hearts with you, bring you into the kind of the family conversation here. Gosh, I am aware that for some of you, this is the first time you are going to hear this. Last week on our Facebook page and through an e-blast and on my blog, we wanted to alert our friends around the world that our dear Craig McConnell had his cancer had come back, raging back. It's a story we will tell you in a moment. But we had put out kind of a word last week, and then this past Monday, August 1st, our dear Craig McConnell stepped into the kingdom at 6:30 in the morning, which was always his favorite time of day. Actually, he loved the early morning. And I'm just so sorry if this is your first heads up, because I know we Craig's been on podcasts recently, and it sounded like he was doing better, and in fact, he was doing better. So we just needed to sit with you this week and bring you into the story and tell you a little bit of what's going on and what happened and what now, and just give your hearts some space in that with our hearts as well. So,
yeah, this is hard news to give, and heartbreaking loss that God gave us the grace and we were anticipating, and nonetheless, we love our friend. And we know where he is. We rejoice where he is, alive and well and in the kingdom. And yet our loss and yours is big.
Yeah. Yeah, I know he meant so much to so many of you, and you can probably see our tears through our voices right now. But what had happened was, I think most of you know that Craig was in a 7-year battle with leukemia, a battle that had some pretty serious ups and downs. We actually thought we were going to lose him several times over the last 7 years, and there were some dark nights. There was some horrible, horrific suffering. And then there was some breakthrough and some promise, and he was on, he was in excellent care down at MD Anderson in Houston, which is a research cancer facility, one of the best in the world, as many of you know. And they had him on a new drug that seemed to be actually doing really well against the leukemia. And so he was back. He was back as early as back in early April, he was back and with us, and here in town, and here in the outpost, and then there was a sudden turn of events, and what happened was his leukemia morphed. It's a very rare syndrome called Richter's syndrome, and the cancer, the leukemia, changed into a lymphoma.
Yes.
And if you Google lymphoma, you'll see that's a form of cancer where they basically say, settle your affairs. It's not treatable. It is lethal. And it tends to be very, very quick.
Right. Craig and Lori got that news in June, we were actually at our son's wedding. And in their kindness, they got the news Friday. The wedding was Saturday. They waited till Sunday to call us, to call the members, friends, team members and staff at the outpost to let us know that at that point, they were giving him, I think, 5 months, mm-hmm. 5 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. So heartbreaking news to get. And in classic and perfect Craig fashion, out of love, he waited to tell us till so we could fully have the joy. And then...
Oh, yeah, of our son's wedding. And then got the phone call the next day.
Yeah.
Lots of prayer, as you can imagine. Ransomed Heart has a circle of intercessors. Many of you are part of that, praying hard. And then over the next 6 weeks, things went up and down, you know. They tried a new drug to deal with the lymphoma, and it seemed actually to work a little bit. It's not something that you can, at this point, apart from God's miracles, you don't fully cure lymphoma, but they were hoping to lengthen his days and provide quality of life. And it was very interesting. Our Brad Beck, our executive director, who is also a doctor, spent years in a private practice as a physician. Mm-hmm. He worked at NASA as a physician, was down there in Houston quite a bit with them. I just completely blanked on where I was going. And this is part of it, gang. We're not going to edit this out. This is trauma brain. I mean, I'm losing my car keys. I'm holding meetings I've already held. I'm having conversations with people I've already had. It's just part of the effect of trauma on the brain. What happened as Brad was kind of walking us through this was Craig's... I know what I was going to say. Brad was down there with Craig, and he called me and said, you know what, he's got 1 foot in the kingdom in his heart.
Yeah.
Not so much in his body yet. We didn't know. We didn't know how long he had, but boy, in his heart, he was so there. Times of worship, times of prayer, times of conversation, he was halfway into heaven even
mm-hmm.
then.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what happened, friends, was they ran out of treatment options, and Craig and Lori basically said, we just want to go home to Colorado. We want to see our family. We want our girls around us. We want to see our friends. And so they shifted barely 10 days ago to palliative care. And we were just so grateful that Craig was able to get home. It was one of the huge answers to prayer that he could be in his own house.
Right, because Craig said, I don't want to die fighting cancer. I want to die loving people.
Yeah.
So, like, they wanted it out of the hospital. They wanted to be home, and he got to be home, and he got to be surrounded by his family.
Yeah, his whole family was there and with him in the last week, and... The grandkids are running around the house.
Right.
And dear friends coming by. And we asked Craig if he would help us to obviously shape his memorial service, shape the announcement we wanted to make. And so I'm losing my time frame, but Friday, the last Friday in July, we put out a blog and a Facebook announcement and an e-blast to our whole list, but some of you didn't get that. And we included some words that Craig wanted in there. Let me read those to you. He said, wow, things can change so fast. So fast it strikes you as wrong, unfair. I was a hair away from remission of his leukemia. Then a rather routine CT scan rang our bell. Now I'm fighting stage 5 Richter's transformation of CLL. I want to say goodbye, dear friends. I want to thank you for the role that you have all played in my life. Till heaven, Craig. And then barely 3 days later, Craig stepped into the kingdom, and it was so gracious. The lymphoma can be pretty brutal, and the end can be pretty painful, as I think a number of you know. And he was in no pain and no suffering. And in fact, there was an incredibly holy moment.
Yeah, when Lori was with him all night. And then in the morning, around 6, his kids came in. And shortly after that, it's a still night, a still morning. And Craig took his last breath, exhaled. And then a mighty rushing wind came blowing through the home. And all of the curtains and their long curtains blew through the air. And a swirling wind just filled the space and lasted more than 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It was pretty holy.
Yeah, very holy. I'm so sorry if this is your first news of this, because it can be pretty shocking. And Craig's got a long history here in this studio, and it's hard to be here without him this morning. I think if you've been tracking with Ransomed Heart, you know that we canceled the August boot camp, barely 2 weeks away now, and there was just no way we could do that. And frankly, we canceled it before Craig stepped into the kingdom, because we didn't know if it would be 2 weeks or 3 weeks or just too hard for all of us. Ransomed Heart is a very small team. There's about 12 full-time employees and 3 or 4 part-time. And so this is a little family, and we've journeyed with Craig for years. In fact, when Stacy and I were first married, we were in Craig and Lori's marriage group. In Southern California, literally 33 years ago.
Right. He was our college pastor.
Yeah, he was. That's how we met. And we've canceled boot camp. We've actually also canceled Captivating in October. And those of you affected by that have already received emails of how you can transfer your registration to the next camp. And so all that's been taken care of. But we did that for two reasons. One, because none of us we couldn't think straight at this point. You know, grief and death. Death is very violent on the human soul. We're not meant to experience it. It wasn't the original design. It's not, so therefore, it's literally not part of our wiring. And it throws you hard, as many of you know. There's a massive amount of disequilibrium and emotions all over the spectrum, and unbelievable exhaustion in the grief stages. And we just needed to be realistic and of what our hearts needed and where we would be at and what it would be like to try and offer those events. But also because we stopped and prayed. We didn't just make a knee-jerk reaction. We gathered up as a team and very seriously, very soberly prayed and asking Jesus some direction now. And he did say that we were to cancel those events and try and encourage everyone to move the registration to the next available event, and just to create some breathing space to navigate grief. And I think that we wanted to use kind of the second half of today's podcast to just say a few things about that, because I know your hearts are now, number of you are going to be kind of reeling with this news.
Mm-hmm.
Let me start with something. There's a quote from a beautiful book called Lament for a Son, a little paperback book written by Nicholas Wolterstorff when he lost his adult son. He captures it so well when he says, "There's a hole in the world now. In the place where he was, there's now just nothing. A center like no other, of memory and hope and knowledge and affection which once inhabited this earth is gone. A perspective on this world, unique in this world, which once moved about within this world, is gone. There's nobody now who saw just what he saw, knows what he knew, remembers what he remembered, loves what he loved. A person, an irreplaceable person, is gone. And he says, the world is emptier. And that's just so true. You know, we're in the early stages of this, and so we're, you know, dropping by the house and checking in on the family. We're also meeting as a team and kind of shepherding our own hearts. But man, there is a big, big hole in Ransomed Heart now, and a big, big hole going forward. And I wrote the staff some thoughts literally this morning, just about navigating grief. And I thought, Stace, you actually suggested that.
Yeah. Help us shepherd us, give us some clues.
Yeah. So just some thoughts on, here's what I say. I said in Monday, and that would have been August 1st, we crossed a massive threshold, the threshold. Up till now, Craig was, quote, with us, even if he was away from the outpost or in the hospital or in California or down in Houston. Yesterday, he left our presence. And then I gave the staff the quote I just gave you from Lament for a Son, and it ends with, the world is emptier. We know we will see Craig again. We will have him forever. All the playfulness, the kindness, the wisdom, his quirky humor, we will enjoy forever. Craig is our friend forever. What we are grieving is missing him now. In the meantime, there is a big hole in the world now. And one thing about grief is the exhaustion. Grief is so draining, all the emotion. This has been a long fight, and you might find yourself utterly exhausted when you wake up. That's pretty normal. Or you might find that you have energy and feel pretty good, but by 1 o'clock, you are completely spent, just empty. Yes, so normal, of course, mercy with exhaustion. And then I go on to say, and the disequilibrium, the disorientation. Death is a violent assault on the soul. It is so hostile, so explosive to God's design for us. The soul experiences it as trauma. Our souls were never meant to go through this. And so we reel like a ship in high seas. We grasp for some sense of normal. It is a very disorienting experience. You might feel it just as weird. I feel so off. Be careful what you reach to for a sense of equilibrium, food, alcohol, busyness. Invite Jesus into the trauma. Invite his love in. Normal will return. We will find our balance. It takes some time. Meanwhile, it's exhausting and at times very disorienting. The soul needs care. It needs beauty and nature. Nature is so healing. Take walks. Get outside. Sit before some flowers. Get some exercise. You may not feel like you want to, but your body is going through it and needs to release. Walks outside. Another thing is the irritation. People and things can become so irritating. Who cares about your sister's new car? So trivial. Who cares about that stupid email? Get a life, people. Don't you know what is important? That kind of thing. Our tanks are pretty empty, and the irritation is just a part of the grief process. Be kind to yourself and to others. They probably aren't trying to be irritating. Your soul is just raw. Stay in the present moment. Stay in today. Today is where God is. Today is where the grace is. You remember the old Corrie Ten Boom story about her father and the train? He said to her, "Corrie, when do I give you your train ticket?" And she replied, "When I need to get on the train, Papa." She used it as an analogy or a parable for God's grace. We don't feel the grace for tomorrow or for this coming fall because we don't need it now. Only the grace for today. Dear ones, we just can't imagine life without Craig. I know. But we don't have to live into the future. We stay right here with Jesus today. Honestly, today is all I can handle. Grief can't take any more days than today. Keep your heart in today. And then I recommended to our team, you might find reading the section on grief in Walking with God, my book called Walking with God, helpful in pages 121 to 130. Or, wow, there's some things in there that could be describing this very moment.
Oh, I think, thank you for that. It's really helpful. And so like today is sort of serving a couple of purposes. One, for you to know the loss of your friend, that maybe you just heard him over his precious podcasts and his wisdom, his humor, his everything. There's no one like him.
His vulnerability, his honesty, his walk with God.
His love. And when you touch loss, it brings back every other loss you have ever endured. And everybody listening here has known loss. So I love your guide just to be sensitive, graceful, but also to invite Jesus in.
Yes.
Invite Jesus in. And what this stirs in you, the fact that everyone is going to pass on to eternity, everyone, sooner or later. And there is hope, and to fix our gaze on Jesus, but at the same time, grieve, not as those who have no hope, but grieve, and beloved ones, invite Jesus in to catch your heart. Yeah. I also wanted just to give a brief little update on Lori, because you're probably wondering how she's doing. And Craig and Lori are married 40 years. You know, met when she was in high school. It's the love of her life. And she is surrounded and filled with grace. Her eyes are locked on Jesus. She actually knows that there's good ahead for her. So she is grieving. But I don't know that I've been in the presence of a more grace-filled woman. And I'm in awe.
Yeah.
So, yes, prayers for her and for the family and those, all of us. But I just want you to know that Jesus is so present. And what a woman.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Several weeks before this, and I love the kindness of God. There's just been so many kindnesses in this. Jesus had me reading The Silver Chair. In the Chronicles of Narnia. I was reading it to Stacy. As a matter of fact, I think some of you know that she had a hip replacement surgery back in June, and sitting in the hospital, I was using it to distract her. Anyway, if Chronicles of Narnia, children get swept off to a magical kingdom, and there they have many adventures. If you're not familiar with The Silver Chair, two young children, a boy and a girl, Jill and Eustace, are summoned by the great lion, Aslan, into Narnia to rescue, to find the lost prince. And they do. They do, after all their adventures and a lot of hardship and fear and suffering. And they find the prince and they bring him home to his aging father, only to arrive at the moment that his father passes away. And the scene, I want to read a little bit to you, because the children are standing there as all of Narnia is suddenly gone from the joy of the reunion to the loss of their beloved King Caspian. And the music changes from celebration to just a tune to break your heart, is how Lewis says it. And It picks up here. I wish I was at home, said Jill. Eustace nodded, saying nothing, and bit his lip. I have come, said a deep voice behind them. They turned and saw the lion himself, so bright and real and strong that everything else began at once to look pale and shadowy compared with him. And in less time than it takes to breathe, Jill forgot about the dead king and remembered only how she had made Eustace fall off the cliff and how she had helped to muff nearly all the signs and about all the snappings and quarrelings. And she wanted to say, I'm sorry, but she could not speak. And then the lion drew them toward him with his eyes and bent down and touched their pale faces with his tongue and said, think of that no more. I will not always be scolding. You have done the work for which I sent you into Narnia. Please, Aslan, said Jill, may we go home now? Yes, I have come to bring you home, said Aslan. And then he opened his mouth and blew. And what happens in the scene is all of Narnia is kind of swept away, and they suddenly find themselves back on the mountain of Aslan. Sort of his version of heaven in this beautiful forest and mountain, high up above and beyond the end of that world in which Narnia lies. But the strange thing was that the funeral music for King Caspian still went on, though no one could tell where it came from. They were walking beside the stream, and the lion went before them, and he became so beautiful, and the music so despairing, that Jill did not know which of them it was that filled her eyes with tears. Then Aslan stopped, and the children looked into the stream, and there, on the golden gravel of the bed of the stream, lay King Caspian, dead, with the water flowing over him like liquid glass. His long white beard swayed in it like water weed, and all three stood and wept. Even the lion wept, great lion tears, each tear more precious than the earth would be if it was a single solid diamond. And Jill noticed that Eustace looked neither like a child crying, nor like a boy crying and wanting to hide it, but like a grown-up crying. At least, that is the nearest she could get to it. But really, as she said, people don't seem to have any particular ages on that mountain. Son of Adam, said Aslan, go into that thicket and pluck the thorn that you will find there and bring it to me. Eustace obeyed. The thorn was a foot long and sharp as a rapier. Drive it into my paw, son of Adam, said Aslan, holding up his right forepaw and spreading out the great pad toward Eustace. Must I? Said Eustace. Yes, said Aslan. Then Eustace set his teeth and drove the thorn into the lion's pad, and there came out a great drop of blood, redder than all redness that you have ever seen or imagined, and it splashed into the stream over the dead body of the king. At that moment, the doleful music stopped, and the dead king began to be changed. His white beard turned to gray, and from gray to yellow, and got shorter and vanished altogether. And his sunken cheeks grew round and fresh, and the wrinkles were smoothed, and his eyes opened, and his eyes and his lips both laughed, and suddenly he leaped up and stood before them, a very young man, or a boy, but Jill couldn't say which, because of people having no particular ages in Aslan's country. And he rushed to Aslan and flung his arms as far as they would go around the huge neck. And he gave Aslan the strong kisses of a king. And Aslan gave him the wild kisses of a lion. At last, Caspian turned to the others. He gave a great laugh of astonished joy. Why, Eustace, he said, Eustace, so you did reach the end of the world after all. What about my second best sword that you broke on the sea serpent? Eustace made a step toward him with both hands held out, but then drew back with a startled expression. Look here, I say, he stammered. I mean, It's all very well, but aren't you... I mean, didn't you... Oh, don't be such an ass, said Caspian. But, said Eustace, looking at Aslan, hasn't he... died? Yes, said the lion in a very quiet voice, almost, Jill thought, as if he were laughing. He has died. Most people have, you know. Even I have. There are very few who haven't. Oh, said Caspian, I see what's bothering you. You think I'm a ghost or some nonsense. But don't you see? I would be that if I appeared in Narnia now, because I don't belong there anymore. But one can't be a ghost in one's own country. A great hope rose in the children's hearts, but Aslan shook his shaggy head. No, my dears, he said. When you meet me here again, you will have come to stay. But not now. You must go back to your own world for a while. Friends, we'll be back next week with more. More of the journey, more of the story, with some highlights from some of Craig's podcasts, and just to honor him. But we needed to get word to you and offer you a little bit of the shepherding that we feel Jesus offering us at this time. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your prayers for Lori and the family. Thank you for your prayers for us here at Ransomed Heart. And may Jesus be near. He is very near.
And beloveds, for all those that have gone before us that we've loved and lost, we will see them again.
Yeah.
But not yet.
Yes.
Not yet.
Not yet.